And welcome back to another episode of the Black Watch Report. I'm your host, Thorn Rain, and with me, as always, my co-host, Mr. Kyle Wynn. How you doing tonight, Kyle?
Better than your computer, apparently. So
yeah,
must be pretty good.
Living the tough life. But we are on episode number 60. We are getting up there in the episodes. That's crazy to think that we're now a little over a year. We've hit the 50 mark. We're well on our way to
retirement soon. We can start getting those retirement benefits.
You know, once you hit that 100 mark, it's like you're actually a pro and you can retire. And yeah, but as always, we kind of start off with what we did. Anything interesting going on for you?
Not really. I'm gonna have to get a new car soon because my wife's car died, so I get to go car shopping for the first time in my life, which is normally you would think kind of a fun thing, but like under the circumstances, it's always a bit rough. Other than that, playing some CS still, playing some PUBG, got back into PUBG a little bit, and then the workshop has been kind of cool. I've done a little bit of messing around with it, but like I just haven't had the actual time to just straight go in and do what I wanted to do. I tried to mess around with some new game modes and stuff, but it just takes so much time, and like I want to get into it, but it's just like it's too much. I think
I have an idea in my head, but I think it's going to take like me and two other people to figure out how to get it done. So
I have been really digging what I've seen people do. Like, I think Darwin Streams has been doing stuff all the time. He's been doing absolutely incredible stuff. I've seen, like, he made, like, a Torb launcher. He made...
Which is nuts.
Bastion into a Torb turret. There's been people doing all kinds of interesting things. New game modes. You've got, like, a Hammond race.
Flores and Lava Lucio Racing.
Yeah. It's
pretty cool.
All kinds of cool stuff. So I'm excited to see, like, I feel like we're still just in that like really golden era of like people kind of figuring stuff out. But I think maybe the next like 4 or 5 months, we're going to start to see some really like really brilliant ideas. I think that like people are going to get really familiar with the system and are going to just kind of be super duper creative as well, with not just like new hero ideas. Like we saw some of what BZ did with trying to like redesign Mercy. And some other people like redid like a whole new hero. But I think like new game modes that I think Surefour tweeted about this is like he can't wait to see an Overwatch workshop mode become its own game. Like it's 100% within the realm of possibility, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Pretty much that's all I've done is I've messed around a little bit in there, played a little bit of Apex. Looking at playing some Sea of Thieves because they've got their 2 year anniversary content coming out. They got a pretty big patch there, scheduled for my new tattoo. So Thursday I get to go get some new tattoo. But other than that, nothing else really going on. So let's move it on down. We checked iTunes, no new iTunes reviews. We did get a new Twitch follower. Ched420, thank you for the follow. That's about it. So let's get down into the news. As always, our news is brought to you by our Patreon. I'm gonna run down really quick our new ranks here. We added some stuff. So we got at the $1 level, the contributor. You get the shout out on the show and added to the contributor section on our Twitch channel. $2, our writer section. That's you get all the contributor benefits as well as you get a personal message read out on the show. And then that is the level where you become a possible sponsor for the news. At the $5 editor level, you get the writer benefits plus priority on any interview questions. And then $10, the new one of the new levels, the producer, you get all of the editor benefits with VIP status on Twitch, and then $20, it's just a special one. There's only 3 of those available. That's the sponsor. You get all of the previous benefits, and then you will be able to run a 15-second ad on the show, basically promoting anything. If it's a tournament, if it's your team, if it's your Twitch, whatever you might like to promote. Kind of got an email from Patreon giving some ideas, so I was like, might as well try them out. But this week's sponsor is going to be none other than Thugly. Thank you so much, Thugly. you're going to take us down into the news.
So with the news, first is another interesting thing. South American Contenders playoffs will be broadcasted on ESPN South America. I'm not 100% certain on what exactly. Let me see if I can translate the tweet so I can get the exact wording. Elimination phase of the tournament will be broadcast on ESPN channels by two people I don't really know of super well. So I think those are the Portuguese or the Spanish casters. Super interesting to see. Maybe now we'll get angry tweets in Spanish and Portuguese instead of in English at why is this, you know, video games on my sports TV. But I think it's, we're seeing that like the couple of the smaller regions for Contenders are really starting to get some decent love from their regions, because we had the news about IEM Sydney last week. That's, I think IEM Sydney is happening right now. I think it was, there was some stuff on last night. But as well as South America is getting some love and attention here from ESPN as well. So super great to see these smaller regions that don't get as much love from like the Twitch and Blizzard side to kind of be picked up on by other bodies to help it grow, which is always great.
Yeah, definitely. Especially like South America. Don't get to see a whole lot here, a whole lot out of there. So the fact that they're going to be on, like, yeah, it's sure it's their local ESPN, but pretty huge to get on national TV on the Contenders level. But our next bit of news here is our prediction was a little bit wrong. By a little bit, I mean completely. We've got the 2019 World Cup announced. Completely new format. It's all being condensed basically into 2 days worth of play. So hopefully it doesn't butcher the Gauntlet too much, considering the Gauntlet will be played a month earlier. Some of the issues I have are still kind of the same. I think it's just a glorified show match. The Gauntlet actually being played at BlizzCon, I think, would have been phenomenal. Yeah, but, you know, World Cup, what can I say? Everybody seems to love it. I think that there's only two countries that really take it completely serious. Everybody else just kind of is like, yay, we made World Cup. So, I don't know. Yeah. It's my take.
Yeah, I kind of wish we were right. I would love to see new ideas, new possibilities come with it. It just seems antiquated, and I don't know, especially with this new system of where, like, the non-top 8 teams or not top 10 teams, like, have to pay their own way in, and they're, like, bunch of matches are happening at the same time, and some of them aren't going to be broadcast, which I guess that makes sense, because there were a whole lot of boring matches, you know, in the qualifier stages. Like, you know, you had Team USA just running through teams, or like Team Canada, where like Agility just was on Lucio and destroying teams, like stuff like that. Like, you don't need to broadcast that. I guess that makes sense, but it still just seems kind of odd. There's definitely better ways to do it, and they seem kind of just be coasting here. So anyways, next little bit of news, last bit of scene / community news, is that Montreal Rebellion has released jerseys available for purchase. Standard jerseys, $50, named jerseys, $60. And these look actually really sick. They're like
really
pretty
nice.
They're pretty simple and not like overly covered with like advertisements and stuff like that. But like the color scheme is solid. I think it's interesting that like Montreal Rebellion is like the most advanced of all of like the Contenders teams so far, like in terms of branding. They just have gotten on it pretty quickly,
and they've already got like a home theater that they're going to start playing out of for season 2.
Right.
They're releasing these jerseys, like, it just, the whole organization seems to have kind of their ish together, which is nice. So but that looks like it's going to wrap it up for our scene news here. So, Kyle, you got this first one on the team news here.
Yep. Another thing that we kind of saw coming, I think it was just like it took a little bit longer to come out. It was that Hardest has left Samsung Morningstars as well. So leaving two players left on the team in Dragonady and Deridro, and then Pipu as the head coach and DaWolf as an assistant coach. So lots and lots and lots of players have left after their contracts have expired. Samsung Morningstars just let him leave and says, you know, let him leave early, I guess, after getting eliminated. And so now they can find new options and opportunities. So good to see. Hopefully Hardest finds a place. I mean, if Paris Eternal are still struggling at the midseason break, and we see Zarya not leaving the meta anytime soon, might be an option. Just because, like, they really seem to need...
They need to shake something up. That's
right. I'm getting a little ahead of myself here because this is an idea that we're considering to have as a later episode. So,
yeah,
that'll be coming soon. But Hardest is definitely a solid Zarya player. Him and KSP had a really interesting, like, switching out and in rotation. But should be interesting to see where he goes.
Oh, definitely. So we basically see the same thing happening over on the NA side with Phase 2. Phase 2 have lost the bulk of their roster. So who we have leaving is going to be Duplicate, Pika, Nishik, It's Onyx, and then one of their coaches, Solheim, have all announced free agency and stepping away from the team. That's going to leave just Rhett and Gunther, their two newest players, on the team heading into trials. We're just about 2 weeks, week and a half out from trials, I believe. Yeah, week and a half, not this weekend, next weekend, is trial starting. So they're going to have to figure out their roster here in the next about 10 days going into trials. Should be kind of interesting to see what Phase 2 do. Might be in their best interest to just do a full rebrand, come in completely new, kind of wash the rest of the Kung Garnet stink off of them. I don't know. I don't see them. That's for another episode. We won't get into Phase 2 in their future.
Just rebrand and become Phase 3. That's what Second Gen did. Are they going to become Third Gen?
I hope so.
I really hope we just start incrementing and then, like,
and in Square 10 years, 2.
Maybe, like, yeah. Square 2, Third Gen, and Phase 3. That's gonna get even more annoying. Anyway, speaking of, we have trials results, or not results, but open division results, and now trials has been laid out in front of us. What we are going to see is Tea Party, Wave Check. If they're going Goats, I'm going Hammond, and Triumph are the top four teams from open division who are going to be moving on into trials, where they face against Phase 2/3, 2/3 Generation, Uprising Academy, and Bermuda. Interesting thing is that some pretty big names on a couple of these teams, mainly in Triumph and Wave Check. I don't know too much about if they're going Goats, I'm going Hammond or Tea Party. But we've got some big names in Boostio, formerly Kaluge, Matman, Krakenlekken on Wave Check, and then Triumph has, you know, Decod, Simito, Aether, Icy. Again, pretty big names. I think Awkward as well was on a team we knew of. So pretty interesting teams. I think that there's a non-zero chance that both of these two teams, if not maybe three of these, make it up into trials. I really just hope Uprising doesn't get relegated down to open vision. That would be a feel sad.
I hope they do. I hope they do so bad. And not because it's Boston. I dislike Boston in general. But I want to see what happens to an academy team when they get relegated to open division. I want to see that process. Even if we only see it once. Just let me see it once. Something to note, Triumph was the only team to go undefeated through open division. And I believe through the playoffs, they only dropped one map, if I'm not mistaken. So they had a heck of a run going through open division. They lost out in the last trials, getting relegated back down into open division. They clearly want to get into contenders this season. So, should be interesting to watch this set of trials matches play out here.
They dropped one map in the semifinals for the upper bracket finals to Tea Party. So super duper solid.
Yep. So that's going to take us over to Mr. Corona Dota. We knew that he had been without a team for a little while. Recently found out that he's going to be joining Higher Level Gaming They look to be a paid like coaching guide type service. So he's going to be transitioning over to them as a content creator. Not sure if he's going to be doing like coaching or just straight guides, but you know, good on him. Like if he's not going to be playing, you know, professionally, he still is a fantastic player. So why not use those skills to, you know, make a little money?
Yeah, especially I don't remember if he was dropped from second gen or if he decided to leave second gen. Either way, it was probably a good move considering second gen also got relegated. Yep. So makes sense. And the last little bit of news here, it's kind of interesting. Chain, who was formerly of Montreal Rebellion, admitted to account sharing to play on an Open Division team for a match. He essentially kind of came clean with it and said, like, listen, this is what happened. I recognize it was kind of a dumb thing. I accept any punishment, apologize for all that stuff. I think that this is a good way to, you know, to see players at least coming clean with stuff. Like, obviously, it would be nice to have them stop account sharing, especially when it's like a semi-pro player kind of smurfing an Open Division. It's kind of
and
not great. But
one of the interesting things on his letter, he was on the team. Like, his account was on the team.
Interesting with the Battlefy thing.
But the admin of the team wasn't able to get to a PC to move him from the inactive roster to the active roster. So it's like one of those things where the process isn't the greatest on Battlefy, it looks like.
Right.
But, I mean, he came out. He admitted that he screwed up. So, you know, no punishment yet, but we'll have to wait and see. Because I know they've been cracking down on account sharing, especially within competition.
Yeah, definitely.
So, that's going to wrap up our news for this evening, which is going to take us down into the quick play. But before the quick play, we've got a really quick message from our sponsor.
Break away from your normal energy and go rogue. Head over to therogueenergy.com and use promo code BlackWatchReport at checkout for 10% off of your purchase.
And that takes us down into the quick play, which we're going to just run over the quarterfinals of the NA playoffs. So starting with NA East here, we saw the Gladiators Legion 3-0, the Chicken Contendees. Pretty solid match. We'll talk a little bit more about that down in the main discussion here. Along with Second Wind falling to Montreal Rebellion 3-1. That is the other matchup that we will talk about down in the main discussion here. So that's going to move the Gladiators Legion on to face off against the Mayhem Academy later tonight. And Montreal Rebellion will be facing off against the Fusion University. Go Montreal. Go Fusion. Like, that's the one where it's like, oh, man, I can't decide who I want to win.
Yeah, definitely. And then in NA West, we've got Square One falling to NRG, which was unfortunately the one match that we got wrong in prediction. We both had Square One winning this. And I wanted to pull up some data to find out, like, when's the last time they played and all that kind of stuff, and I forgot, like, who won.
Square One beat them.
Yeah, 3-1 a while in week three. Okay, that was, like, we kind of had a little bit of a gauge on why they would win, but it just, like, this was probably the most toss-up of the matches we could have had. Like, I'm pretty sure we were both pretty confident about Glad's Legion. We were both pretty confident about Montreal.
Yep.
Pretty confident about Atlanta. But yeah, this was definitely, if we were to get one wrong, it probably would have been this one anyways.
Yeah,
so that was another 3-0, and then closing it out was Atlanta versus XL2. That was a straight 3-0, which included some holding at the spawn doors aggression, and I think, who was it? Bird said something about my Doomfist is nice, so I wanted to catch it, but I feel like he may have played Doomfist at one point, which would have been hilarious, so. I definitely want to take a look at that one, but we did have three other matches to look at in the meantime, so you got to pick and choose.
Yes.
Did you already cover what's coming up for the semis? I don't remember.
For the NA West? Yeah, I covered the East.
Oh, okay. So then what we have coming into NA West playoffs is Envy coming in against NRG, and they are playing today.
Yeah, all four matches
are today. Yeah, all four of these, right. And lastly, we have Sky Foxes versus Atlanta, which we are split on, but we have Envy taking the Envy NRG match. And then we have, I have Sky Foxes, you have Atlanta Academy. This is our big split of the week here. I have a coin. Should we flip it?
Yeah, let's flip it.
Okay. Okay. Heads for Sky Foxes.
All right.
And then it is tails. Or what is this? It's a, yeah, it's a state quarter. It's a tail. So, the coin has Atlanta winning this, but yes, and coin on the list as well. So we'll see if I can, you know, overwhelm the odds and get the Sky Foxes win here. All they need to do is just keep hitting 6-man EMPs. So yeah, that should be super cool to watch. I'm excited about these.
If Buds doesn't play the majority of this matchup on Sombra, I will be very disappointed. But
it's all about how Atlanta can counter that, or if we'll see what happens to them is what will happen in the game that we're talking about right now, I guess.
Yeah, which it works because we're going from probably the best NA Sombra to what potentially could be the best Korean Sombra.
Yes,
because good God. Let's talk about this Runaway versus Element Mystic matchup here. Element Mystic handing Runaway their first defeat, I believe, in 25 matches. Now, that is outside of contenders also. So it was a 3-1. 3-2. It went to 5.
3-2. Yeah.
It did go to 5. And we saw some absolute domination at points from Element Mystic. So, Kyle, why don't you start us off with your start of the analysis here?
So, looking at Runaway overall as a team here, they definitely had some smart plays. I guess we kind of have to talk about Element Mystic first because Runaway's performance was in response to what we saw from Element Mystic. So, let's flip it here. Element Mystic played almost, if not entirely, all five maps with Doha, who's their D.Va player, playing on Sombra. And they kind of just stuck with it and ran with it the entire time. And it seemed to work out really well. They won a bunch of fights off of EMPs. Doha got basically 5 or 6 main EMPs basically every time.
Yep.
Just really big combos. So they'd win a fight off of that, then they'd win a fight off of Grab or Shatter, like a standard kind of goats fight. And when you're winning two fights versus, you know, when your enemy's only winning one, you tend to win more. So they really, really, really were relying on, not relying on it, but like the EMP farming and really good execution usage from Doha really, really. And you have a quick note on this as well.
Yeah, Doha builds EMPs insanely quick. He was getting them in like the first minute in some of the matches. First engagements, he was getting up to like 60%. The way he's building them so fast is he plays a very aggressive backline Sombra. He's not your typical Sombra that goes in the back, finds the support, tries to hack, and then tries to kill. No, he, as soon as he gets behind the shields, he just unloads into everybody that he can hit and gets 20 to 30 charge before he has to translocate out. It's crazy how quick he builds them. There was a moment on, oh man, I forget which map this was on. It was on Lijiang Night Market. Where he used a grav defensively, or he used the EMP inside of grav defensively, basically shutting everybody down from being able to capitalize on the grav from Runaway. And then it's a fight that they should have lost, but the EMP inside of the grav saved them. Now, granted, they did lose the map, but it was one of those plays where in that moment it was the right play. And it was like a heads up play. Like, his Sombra play is absolutely nutty. Now, you did mention that they pretty much ran the Sombra the whole game. The only time that we saw Doha come off of the Sombra was on Junkertown, when Hisu ran McCree for their attack, for Runaway's attack. He actually switched over to the Brig to counter the McCree and played the Brig at a very substantially good level, because we only got to see it for a couple minutes. Like, it was like a minute and a half before they completely shut him down. So Doha on Sombra, just phenomenal.
And one of the things that you mentioned, that he was very often in the back line and staying in the back line. One of the things I found interesting, that he seems to get caught out more than a lot of other teams did, which was, or a lot of other Sombras have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because he's playing so aggressively and like staying the extra second to get that extra little bit of ult charge. He got punished for it a couple times, and you would think that maybe he'd get punished for it way more, but maybe he just found that perfect sweet spot of like knowing exactly when to translocate out of there. But there was a couple of times, I think, namely on Horizon Lunacone, where he just kind of straight randomly died early in the fight. And then I think he was on defense, too. So it kind of gave Runaway the leg up there.
Mm-hmm.
What you would expect to see coming out of Runaway is, when you have the enemy's D.Va player exclusively on Sombra, you don't have a D.Va, and with no D.Va means bionades just get infinite potential. And so that's exactly what they did. They had Gangnam Jin, getting better at these names here. He went Ana pretty much most of the time, probably about 70 to 80% was on Ana, and got a lot of really good bionades, especially off of help. When there's a grab, they'll only use a grab and a bionade, be able to just use one ult and one ability to pretty much wipe out the team. Because even if the Zen trances, you can probably get two with the bionade, get two picks, and then you're in a 4v6 and they have no trance anymore after that. You pretty much win the fight regardless. So that was always pretty smart of them. And then Li Jiegon is the other kind of big support here. Really took it upon himself at a couple times to really try to shut down the Sombra. I think on Li Zhang Night Market, he was like chasing Doha down and like killing her even after she translocated. So they were playing pretty smart against it. That just seemed like the main issue was they were doing all the right counter picking in terms of roster swaps and stuff like that. It just felt like maybe they couldn't quite get a read on how Doha was positioning himself to be able to counter him or to take advantage of his aggression, but they came pretty close. It was interesting to see, and it wasn't purely just the Sombra from Doha to really give Element Mystic the leg up here. The other members of this team had a pretty good performance as well. One of the players is that Sparkle we previously looked at a couple weeks ago, and seemed to really be challenged. Rather challenged with. I can't remember what exactly he was doing that wasn't. I think he had some good grabs. It seemed like they were having issues playing around the grabs or something along those lines. I can't remember exactly, but
yeah, I think it was just follow through.
Yeah, things are definitely a lot smoother now. And he's always built grabs super quickly, so he's basically getting one per fight. So he'll initiate a fight with one, and then by the time the fight is over, if it's a longer fight, he'll have it again. So he's always been hitting huge damage on there. And then Hanan on Brigitte, which this is the one thing, my one major gripe with this is you have huge plays coming from Brigitte, but it's just so hard to see very often. But this one particular one was absolutely huge on Horizon Lunar Colony B on their first attack. Hanbin matching up with who's there? Lucio. It's not Undyne, but it's Unsomething. They have two unnamed players on there. Let's find out.
Unique?
Unique, yes. He first off booped Gangnam Jin, who tranced in, and then after that, then Hanbin hit with the flail, knocked it, whip shot, yeah, knocked it back again. So we got double knocked back just to get that extra little bit of, you know, time left on the point. They're able to cap it out. Because normally when you get the trance on there, it'll stall out for like 5-6 seconds, then you get the wrecking ball on there, and yes, you'll still win the fight, but you'll lose like a minute and a half usually. They were able to just get it super duper quick and clean. Really good usage of crowd control to keep the enemies then off. And then lastly, Undyne had some really, really clutch trances. There was one specifically on Junkertown when Sparkle got solo grabbed. You could see him go whoop right in there. And you often see that happen with some Zens, and they're just a little late. And it always feels really bad because now you're down one and you've invested Transcendence, and just like the fight's basically lost at that point. He did not have that issue. Was able to get right there in time and save his teammate. So really good play from a lot of the members of Element Mystic as well. This was not just purely Doha straight carrying with the Sombra, but it seems to be a big factor in this matchup, as well as Runaway just maybe got caught off guard by it and weren't really sure how to play against it. I'm not sure. I watched a little bit of Sideshow streaming review of this, and he brought up a lot of the issues in Gangnam Jin's nano boost usage, which I think could be part of it as well. They used it aggressively as opposed to using it to save like a tank or something like that, which could be part of it as well. So it'll definitely take like a much deeper dive than I had time to do to really get an idea of like what really happened, but this is kind of what we were able to glean from watching it at normal speed with sound off, just kind of trying to pay attention to stuff.
See, you got lucky and were able to watch it at normal speed. I had to cram the almost 2-hour match into an hour today before the show, simply because of the way everything times out. But yeah, like it was a phenomenal match. If you haven't watched it, I highly suggest going and watching it. It's pretty exciting all the way through. But let's talk about some NA teams here. We're going to stick solely to NA West here. No, I'm sorry, NA East. We're going to start off with the Montreal Rebellion going up against Second Wind. Montreal Rebellion take this 3-1 over Second Wind. Second Wind, you know, losing out in the quarterfinals, but getting that bye directly into Contenders Season 2. You know, looking phenomenal all season. Went through a ton of changes. This last set of changes just wasn't quite enough to keep them on their winning streak, their winning ways, I guess you say. So, Kyle, what do you have for this matchup here?
So Second Wind is a team that was put together, this latest iteration was put together like 2 weeks ago in a day and a half, or like in ten hours. So it's not the optimal roster. You lost Gods and Sherrick, who were absolutely phenomenal as a duo and had, you know, were definitely part of a lot of their wins that they had. But they had to fill the gap with a lot of other players, and things got kind of rough. One of the things just as a whole for this roster, their DPS line and their support line seems to both be pretty solid here. Obviously not like your top three in the league, but pretty good. Tank line seems to be having some issues, though, mainly that Frill kind of got bodied in the Rein v Rein. He always shattered first for the most part. Usually either got one or got completely blocked, and then always, pretty much always got, you know, counter shattered by Sherrick and just got like 3, 4, 5, 6 even at times. So it's definitely showing that, like, he, I don't know how much he played Ren before being a Brig one trick for a long time and then played some other stuff here and there.
I mean, Brig is just a mini Reinhardt, so.
Exactly, exactly. But it definitely shows that he's not quite at the same level as his competition here, and it seems like Montreal really took advantage of that. Some positive notes here for Second Wind is Azire. His grav placement was pretty good. They had interesting things. Frill charged a lot. He charged more than I think most other Rens I've seen do, but for the most part, it seems to not be like a Janus charge where he straight like dies. They seem to be a little bit more set up well by his team in that, if someone brought this up, I can't remember. I think it was Avast brought up, like, he's always placing them on corners, which is interesting. Because then if you have one Zen trancing on one side, on the other side of a corner wall, he might not have line of sight on, you know, like a Zarya or something. So if you charge her out or just damage her, it works and you get the kill still through the trance. He had Sombra for a map, which really didn't work super well. I think he, like, at one point got a couple EMPs and only hit like one person. So that's always kind of rough. But man, when he brought out the Ash, his Ash was absolutely stellar on Horizon Lunar Colony. He was just clicking heads left and right. It is always nice to see some good Ash play come out from these players. Oh, yeah. And then my last kind of note here for a Second Wind player is Hello, I'm Halo is definitely a much better Lucio than he was a Widow. I forget what I was on. It was on Blizzard World when he tried to get the grapple shot, missed like three or four times on the grapple, and like, okay, at this point you might as well just run back inside and switch off, and he did. So that was kind of a, it was like the fire Mercy drop when he missed the res both times and dropped off the ledge.
Yep.
That was, it's kind of one of those, like, you know, Yakety Sax moments. And then on the side of Montreal, real quick, like, the one thing I noticed was this is probably the best control center play I've seen from a team so far. They were so clinical. Because Second Wind ran out with the, what was the term? It was like a mobile summer tether.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It was a great name. I could not remember it for the life of me. But what it was basically the Symmetra bunker comp, where you would teleport to the bunker. Like, I think it's like the mega up there on Control Center, outside by kind of where the two windows are. They teleported up there. And then Gods comes out with the May, as you see a lot of teams do. A lot of teams will run the May there and on Nepal Village. And I don't think this was exactly his like original idea. I think we've seen it for years and years in the past. But you just kind of bring the wall up underneath the Bastion, bring the Bastion above the shield, and then just shred him down. That's exactly what they did. So that was super smart play from him. And he played a lot of heroes this match. He played May, he played the D.Va, and his D.Va's always been solid. Got a couple of grav eats on Blizzard World, I think. Hanzo on Horizon was pretty solid, opened up the points quite often. Tracer on defense World was pretty good, but I think they ran into some issues with point contestion. Because he was on the Tracer, you can't have anyone play on the point too much, and I think they just had a Wrecking Ball, so once the Wrecking Ball died, there's like no one to stand on point, which was rough. Like mechanically he's super solid. I think it was just the decision making on the Tracer defense that was a bit rough, but I think the second attack they changed that around. You had a note too, right?
Yes. Well, it was kind of just talking about all of the same stuff about the Hanzo, the Mei, the Tracer. Getting to see Gods, like, it felt like Montreal was just being disrespectful. They're like, we're not even going to put our best player on his best character.
Right.
Like, it was absolutely nuts to just watch him pop off on Hanzo, pop off on, you know, like you said, on May on Control Center. Because not only did he get the wall to take out the Bastion, but he drops a Blizzard down in a doorway. So then second one tries to retreat. They were kind of in the side where like all the astronaut memorabilia is on Control Center. So then they try to run away because it's only covering half of the room. Well, then he walls off the other door. So they're trapped in this corner where it's safe from the blizzard. And then just the rest of Montreal just walks in and team wipes them. Like, it was disgusting how he zoned them into a corner of a room and just wrecked them.
I think that one particular stage, they... First off, Hunter to zeroed on Control Center, but I don't know if anyone on Montreal died. I'd have to go back and check, but I think it was like...
That would be an interesting stat to find out.
It was super duper duper clean. They literally held them at the doors every single time, walled them off, got the split, got Frill caught out, stuff like that. It was just absolutely disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
If they as a team could ever do, like, be that clean on every map, they would be undefeated for a long time. Like, that type of just consistent play, super clean, no mistakes, was just absolutely stellar to see. I mentioned this kind of previously when we were talking about Frill, but on Sherrick, he just was really, really good at the counter shattering. It seems like with GOATs, it's been kind of the trend that whoever ults second wins usually. And it's not like an always rule, but like for the most part with transcendences, if both Zen's trance, usually the one who, you know, ends it first, his team is usually now screwed because the enemy team still has their trance going. Same with Ryan shatters, because I think for the most part, Frill kind of got overly ambitious. Like, I got like one, let's charge in an attack. Oh wait, Sherrick has shattered. Okay, now all of our team's dead. So that's always rough to see, as well as Logix. Logix was a phenomenal hit scan player that we know, and it was kind of silly to see him drop from Mayhem. He had a little bit of an issue getting kind of up to snuff on Zarya. It seemed to have a little bit of a ramp up for him. He kind of just didn't immediately look fantastic, but neither did all of Montreal at the time. But I think there was... Oh, yeah, yeah. There was a couple of times where he would like have really good target selection here. He would just be able to know that there was one kind of person just a little bit out of position, able to just straight left click burn them down. A lot of fights were just one off of that. Like, they would really push the Reinhardt, break the shield, and immediately Logix was like 100 energy, just straight into the Reinhardt and killed him. Same with the Brig. I think that there was a time when Zenyatta was trancing in on Rialto, and he noticed that Brig was like just out of line of sight or just out of range for the transcendence to do anything, so he made sure to burn down the Brig like right as the trance came out. So really smart target selection here. We didn't get to see too much. Like, I think we saw a little bit of Ash, but I don't think much from him. I can't wait till we see some more. This guy was always incredible at that. But
yeah, but that's going to take us into the last matchup that we're going to be talking about tonight, and that's the Gladiators Legion going up against the Chicken Contendees. Gladiators Legion 3-0. Now, I believe this was, it wasn't an Atlanta versus New York 3-0. Like, this was a little bit closer. It wasn't like a super tight 3-0, but Gladiators Legion just kind of showing off their new-ish flex tank. I don't know how you put that, because he's been part of the team, just not this team.
Right.
But, so let's get right into it. What do you got going into this matchup here?
So, I want to start off talking about Chicken Contendees here, because they came out of the door pretty hot. I think they started out on Li Zhang, and I think they won both. I think out of all three stages they played there, they won the first, like, 2-3 fights. So they ended up going up to like 60% on the meter every single time. But then they kind of got retaken every time and lost from there. It definitely was a closer 3-0. I think it was maybe closer than Montreal second wind was, despite the score line, just in terms of, I think the 2CP went to like a bunch of rounds. I think that every map seemed to have gone quite the distance. Let me see if I can pull up the stats on this one, though. I'm super curious about this. Gladiator's Legion attendees. So, yeah, Li Zheng was 100-99 on all but the last one. Both Eichenwald went, I think, all the way to the end. Both teams capped, and then it, I think it was that Chicken Contendees weren't able to cap, and then Glads were. Oh, Hanamura, though, was, that's where it kind of fell apart. That was the full hold. They got 40%, and then Glads kind of clapped them there. So it was close up until the last map. That last map is kind of where they fell apart. Salty is probably one of the main solid looks here. For Chicken Contendees on the D.Va, a lot of pretty good bombs. Very often not even needing to have them be set up by the Graviton, which is always pretty good to see as well. Always good to have just a 2k bomb that you're using just to initiate the fight and get people scrambled. And then Gig here. Interesting, like kind of like we saw a lot from Frill. He charged quite a lot as well. But his shatters kind of get a little overambitious, and his team kind of gets the bitter end of that.
So I've got, you talked about Hanamura being pretty much the stomp. There's a moment where Rob uses a trance right as, I believe it was Gig, had just went down. He uses trance, and instead of them using trance to disengage, the whole team decides to continue to try to fight for the point, 6v5, and they just burn their time. Everybody stays alive, but they make zero progress. And just as Gig is coming back, bodies start to fall. And it was just like, they wasted like, I think a total of a minute. It was probably about 45 seconds that they burned off the clock because Rob used his trance, and they were like, well, we used trance, we might as well fight for it. Had they disengaged, kept the trance, they may have been able to do something a little bit different. It was just a really weird usage. I mean, I don't ever remember really seeing Rob using trances improperly, at least that bad. It was one of those things where it was kind of a, they were nervous, maybe. They knew that their series was on the line. Like, I don't know, it was just really out of character for Rob to see. But that pretty much sealed Chicken Contendies getting full held. Because after that, they weren't able to even get back onto the point. Like, that was their last attempt at the point.
Yeah, Rob had a lot of moments of just straight fragging out here and there. Lots of good damage, lots of good cleanup kills, but it seemed to just not be enough. There was just too many other issues with team coordination, not playing smart around enemy ultimates and stuff like that. On the Gladiator's Legion side, talk about Panker, because every time, because like, until he gets fully called up, he's kind of smurfing down here in contenders. Great shatters, usually counter shatters as well. Again, we saw that with Sherrick, and almost always got the upper hand on the counter shatter. Same with Panker, same thing. He let Gig try to shatter first, blocked it, maybe lost to Zarya, but then as soon as he charges in to go try to, you know, kill the Zarya, his whole team gets shattered as well. One of the big things that I feel like we don't see that much of is the Ren charge to set up the D.Va bomb during Gravitons. Mm-hmm. It's kind of this rehearsed code line of how to play this combo well, because you got to throw the grab, then hit the bomb up, and Ryan charges the enemy Ryan to get the shield out of there and burn through the other bubbles of the Zarya and stuff like that. And this team seems to be one of the best at kind of executing on that particular combo. And oh my god, part of the other reason they full held on Hanamura, just like look at his Winston plan. Like, luckily they kept it on his cam for like half of the map.
Yep.
Because, oh my god, he was like right close to death every single time. It was just like always just absolutely popping off. Huge, huge primal rages, huge damage, just absolutely tearing the team apart.
He gets primal, pops it at like 90 health, saves himself, knocks a bunch of people off of the point. This is in the same fight that where I talked about Rob popping his trance. Right. Primal ends. He builds another primal in that same fight and then starts to try to throw people off of the map with his second primal. Just scattering people to where they can't get healing. I think he ended up throwing, it might have been Rob that he threw off of the back of the map to kind of close out that attack. But it prevented everything that Chicken Contendies was trying to do. Like, Panker is a god on main tank. Like, it's a yes, he's on a two-way contract, but he could be sitting up on that stage playing for any team that needs a tank right now. Which,
looking at you, Mayhem.
We have all of that for another episode, but great. Good god, like, Panker needs to be paid. Like, and I'm not talking minimum salary, because this man is absolutely nuts on all of the main tanks.
Mm-hmm. Talk about Dalton, man. Pretty good Zarya. Fine there. Didn't really, like, explode or you know, have anything super great or super bad. But, man, his Widow on Gardens was, oh, beautiful. I missed it so much. At one point, he picks off Harblue right as he's running in to start the fight. And like, okay, well, you lost your Zarya. Like, good luck. Better go back to the spawn, because that's like, you cannot win a fight without Zarya. Especially like to start out. Like, you have to turn around, basically. And then Water as well, kind of. I think this is like on Gardens, and when their two DPS can play Widow and Pharah, it just seems like the floodgates have opened for all of their abilities. He just is so clean on the Pharah. You know, his ability to like conk blast in through the window, hit a barrage and actually not die. You know, when the D.Va flies at him, he does the quick turn and turn back to not, you know, kill himself with the barrage. Great conk blasts, you know, over people going over the bridge and getting them knocked off. Big damage, big pick. Just like, he just seems at home. Him and Mangachu, just like, as soon as they can play the Pharah, it's just like next level. Are they? They're not playing against each other at any point, are they? Wait, who's?
No, they would. They
oh
would
no!
Have
wait.
To, yeah, this week. Wait.
Oh, please, please give me Li Zhang. Please give me Gardens. I would love to see the Pharah v Pharah between Water and Mangachu. Oh, that'd be absolutely so sick.
Yeah, I'm so hyped for that.
That'll be fantastic.
And when they signed Water and he was playing from Korea, you could tell that the latency was affecting him a little bit. But again, it's kind of that who are you syndrome. You get him to NA and he bumps himself up that ever so little. He literally just got to NA, I believe this is his first match in NA.
Interesting.
And you could tell that he was very happy to be playing on, you know, that low ping, being able to match one for one on the latency, so he wasn't trying to predict shots more so than he has to when he's playing on the fair. Yeah, Water just doing great things now that he's here in NA. Can't wait to watch a whole season with him in NA.
Yep. And then lastly here is Bishu, who we really wanted to take a look at because we didn't get to see any matches with him up until this one. He played, I think this is his second match he's played with the team. First match was a bit rough, I think. They lost that one versus someone.
That was against Montreal, I believe, and they lost 3-2.
Okay, so it was close, but it was still a pretty rough loss.
Or no, it was Fusion. Bermuda. Oh, Bermuda. Yeah,
They lost to Bermuda. That was a rough loss. Yeah. I think that was his first game.
That was, yep.
First game back. So this is an interesting substitution here. Bishu is pretty good at the grav eats on D.Va. Pretty good bombs as well. Usually got one or two kind of consistently, which is always good to see. Was able to play the Sombra, and his hack selection was pretty good. He seemed to always know who to hack to set up his team well. So if he had a, you know, if Dalton had a grab and, you know, there's something like that, he would hack the D.Va to make sure the grab didn't get eaten, or would hack the Brig so that she couldn't bash to set up the Reinhardt chat or stuff like that. Like his knowledge of the game and who to hack was really, really good and really shown through in this particular matchup.
Yeah, and kind of his performance, we talked Bermuda. They lost to Bermuda. You know, the bottom team in contenders this season. Gladiators Legion being their only win. But that was with
No, they won one more as well. Yeah. Against Uprising. Uprising was
the that bottom. Is right. They did beat two Academy teams. I completely forgot that they beat Uprising because I try to forget about them. But with Bishu coming in, that being his first match, you could tell that there was just a little bit off. But this matchup, you could tell, like, he hadn't played for a long time going into that Bermuda matchup. He had been sick, and then he came back and kind of lost his spot on Gladiators because they needed to fill it going into Season 2. So, like we had talked about before, using your two-way contracts kind of as, you know, maybe a rehabilitation or a refresher, it's clearly working out for Bishu because he was back to playing at, you know, at a level that we're used to seeing Bishu play at. I really want to see other teams start to, you know, use two-way contracts like this. If they have a player that needs some time off, you send them down to the minor leagues. You see it in in baseball all the time. Like, somebody's hitting a slump. All right, well, we got to put somebody in that's not slumping. You're going down to contenders. Like, right. this is a phenomenal setup. And for us to see this working, no matter the outcome for the playoffs, you can see that it's a viable strat to use.
Definitely.
So definitely, man, can't wait to watch that Mayhem Gladiators Legion. We both have Mayhem taking it, but if this team plays the way that they did against Chicken Contendees, it should be a very, very interesting matchup tonight.
Yeah, definitely with a lot of these matches, like, our predictions don't go where our hearts are. Like, our hearts and our brains are definitely split here. Like,
yeah.
Considering we had Mate on the show, we want him and some Glads Legion to do well. And we also want, you know, Tencent and Gods to do well for Montreal. But, like, at the same point, Mayhem and Fusion are both, like,
our
definitively
houses.
The stronger teams. Luckily, with Envy, we can vote with both our heart and our mind there. But then Sky Foxes were kind of split as well because we don't have any players we've talked to on those teams. So then just kind of comes to preference. But yeah, it is interesting to see that, like, we either way, we're kind of happy with any of the results from these matches. But because either our predictions are right, or, you know, the people who've been nice enough to come up on the show and chat with us, they're getting success as well, which is always great to see.
Yep. So basically all of these matches are just win-wins. Just sit back and enjoy some great tier 2 Overwatch. That's what tonight is about.
So. Except if Envy loses to NRG, then we're all really, really sad.
Yes, because NRG are mean and they ruined our perfect bracket, and that's horse crap.
Yeah.
But I think that's everything.
I think it is, yeah.
No speculation station, no community intel this week. So as always, if you're an audio listener, swing by the Twitch, make one of those free accounts, and hit that follow button. All the follows do help. And if you happen to have a Twitch Prime laying around, we are affiliates. You can feel free to sub to the channel. That helps out greatly. And if you want to help out absolutely free, just a little bit of your time, and then make Kyle read your message, swing over to iTunes, leave us a review, 1 star, 5 star. We read them all. We love you guys' feedback. Let us know what we're doing right. Let us know what we're doing wrong. We'll take care of it if we can. But other than that, Kyle, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me pretty much on Twitter for right now. Twitch will come as soon as I have more free time to stream. Both of those are Kyle the Winner, KyleTheWynner.
And you can find me over on Twitter at ThornRain. I do most of my streaming whenever I can right here on the Black Watch Report Twitch channel. You can find the show on Twitter at Black Watch Report. There's no O in that report. You can email the show, blackwatchreport@gmail.com. We will read those live on the show if you do send in an email. You can follow the show on Twitch, twitch.tv/blackwatchreport. We record live Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern. Our intro music is an original piece by our very own Kyle Wynn. This has been a High Noon production. You can follow all of our shows over at highnoonpodcast.com. And you can come and chat with all of the hosts on the Discord at discord.me/highnoonpodcast. And with that, Black Watch out.